Shodanandana Bhajajanarandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Gopijana Balabha Givardhari Gopijana Balabha Givardhari Shodanandana Bhajajanarandana Shodanandana Bhajajanarandana Yamuna Tira Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribhrajaka Charja Stavatara Sarashi Srimad, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishna Brinda Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Sakahosri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Sham Kundarara Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Shnabali Dham Ki Jai Shri Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Shri Shri Ayodhya Dham Ki Jai Shri Shri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Gangamaya ki jai, Gaur Premanandi, Harinama Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Shri Brihatmadanga ki jai, Transcendental Prasadam Distribution ki jai, Shri Shri Gauranitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanji ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Bhaktivedanta Manudan ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Centennial ki jai, Shama Veta Bhaktivrinda ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Samula. All glories to Samula. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Rayanam Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Navrotamam Devim Sarstim Vyasam Dato Jayamudirayat Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tamashlokir Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. So reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, 3rd canto, 9th chapter, 14th text, is that right? Shashvat Swarupa Mahasaiva Nipita Veda Mohaya Bodha Dishanaya Nama Parasmai Vishvodbhava Stitilayeshu Nimittalila Rasaya Te Nama Idam Chakrimeshvaraya Shashvat Swarupa Mahasaiva Nipita Veda
Shashvat Swarupa Mahasaiva Nipita Veda
Mohaya Buddha Dishanaya Nama Parasmi Mohaya Bodha Dishanaya Nama Parasmai Ishpod Bhavasti Tilayeshu Nimitta Lila Ishpod Bhavasti Tilayeshu Nimitta Lila Rasaya Tenama Idam Chakrameshvaraya Rasaya tinnama idam chakrameshvaraya Shashvat swarupa mahasaiva nipita veda Mohaya buddha dishanaya nama parasmai Mohaya buddha dishanaya nama parasmai Vishvod bhavasti tilayeshu nimitta lila Rasaya te nama idam chakrameshvaraya
Shashvat
sarupa mahasaiva nipita veda
Mohaya bodha dishanaya nama parasmai
Mohaya Buddha Dishanaya Nama Parasmai Asaya Te Nama Idam Chakrameshvaraya Marajis Shashvat Swarupa Mahasaiva Nipita Veda
Mohaya Bodha Dishanaya Nama Parasmai Vishvodbhavasi Tilayeshu Nimitta Lila
Shashvat,
eternally.
Svarupa, transcendental form. Mahasa, by the glories. Eva, certainly. Nipita, distinguished. Veda, differentiation. Mohaya, unto the illusory conception. Bodha, self-knowledge. Dishanaya, intelligence. Nama, obeisances. Parasmai, unto the transcendence. Vishva Udbhava, creation of the cosmic manifestation. Stiti, maintenance. Layeshu, also destruction. Nimita, for the matter of. Lila, by such pastimes. Rasaya, for enjoyment. Te, unto you. Namaha, obeisances. Idam, this. Chakrima, do I perform. Ishvaraya, unto the Supreme. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Let me offer my obeisances unto you, the Supreme Transcendence, who is eternally distinguished by His internal potency. His indistinguishable impersonal feature is realized by intelligence for self-realization. I offer my obeisances unto Him who, by His pastimes, enjoys the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation responsibly. Let me offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Transcendence, who is eternally distinguished by His internal potency. His indistinguishable impersonal feature is realized by intelligence for self-realization. I offer my obeisances unto Him who, by His pastimes, enjoys the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord is eternally distinguished from the living entities by His internal potency, although He is understood in His impersonal feature by self-realized intelligence. Devotees of the Lord, therefore, offer all respectful obeisances unto the impersonal feature of the Lord. The word rasa is significant herein. The rasa dance is performed by Lord Krishna in the company of the cowherd damsels at Vrindavan. And the personality of Godhead, Garbho Dakshayi Vishnu, is also engaged in rasa, enjoyment, with His external potency, by which He creates, maintains, and dissolves the entire material manifestation. Indirectly, Lord Brahma offers His respectful obeisances unto Lord Sri Krishna, who is factually ever engaged in rasa, enjoyment, with the gopis. As confirmed in the Vedas, in the following words, Paradhante so buddhyata gopavesho me purastad avir bhuva. The distinction between the Lord and the living entity is definitely experienced when there is sufficient intelligence to understand His internal potency, as distinguished from the external potency by which He makes possible the material manifestation. Om Agyana Timirandasya Agyana Nanjana Salakaya Chaksurun Maritam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Svapadanti Ham. Lord Brahma is described in various parts of Prabhupada's teachings as the greatest tapasvi. He undergoes great penances in order to create the material world. His austerity is that he never thinks that it is within his power to create the material world. But he prays for the intelligence from the Lord to create and to perform His function. he meditates very deeply upon the instructions given to him by the Lord, as we read in the second canto. I think it's the ninth chapter. It is described that the Lord vibrates two syllables, ta and pa. And even though Lord Brahma cannot ascertain, this is described as a sound from the ether, cannot ascertain visually the source of this instruction, nevertheless, he meditates for a thousand of his years, celestial years, upon tapa, just two syllables. But within those two syllables are the complete instruction and the complete knowledge for him to carry out his duty, to carry out his service. And Lord Brahma is always actually praying to the Lord, may I always have your blessings to carry out my duty to serve you. So he's seeking instruction, and he's also seeking mercy, and he's also seeking the blessings, how to fulfill the desire of the Supreme Lord. This is what qualifies him as being a great tapasvi. There are different types of tapasyas that are undergone. Sometimes yogis will walk around with a loincloth in the mountains, in the Himalayas, in the snow, or they'll submerge themselves in cold ice water, just with their head sticking out of a hole in the ice in the winter in the mountains, or they'll sit around a big fire or wrapped in blankets during the summer. And there are all sorts of tapasya that we see people undergoing now, trying to live underwater for 300, 400 years, or sticking swords in their eyes without drawing blood until the sword bends, and so many different types of... These are austerities. And some of them are austerities in the modes of ignorance. We've heard of the Christian self-immolation, where they slap themselves with nails and wire brushes and cause the flesh to bleed. And there's people we see in India that are buried up to their neck in the sand, and people that try to slow their breathing down and then obtain the different mystic siddhis, like flying in the air and making themselves very small and manifesting in many different places and acquiring things from distant areas. Bhakti siddhi, controlling other people's minds. But tapasya in this age is chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's so easy that even Lord Brahma and other demigods sometimes come dressed as ordinary people just to experience the ability to obtain perfection, because in Kali Yuga you contain perfection. In other ages you had to meditate for 70,000 years or undergo great temple sacrifices or temple worship. But in this age, there's a great benefit. Even the demigods come to participate in the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. And following the regulated principles, following the instruction of the spiritual master. So it is said that Krishna actually initiated Lord Brahma. He was his disciple, and Krishna was the guru. And this is the reason that he is considered a great tapasvi, that he followed the instructions. He was initiated into it's described as the 18-letter mantra, Krishna mantra, and we're initiated into the 16-syllable Hare Krishna mantra. But it's the same thing, as Prabhupada writes in his purports. So, because Lord Brahma was very faithful and loyal to the instructions given to him, he was able to do what, by our standards, would seem to be impossible, because he followed the order. And similarly, we have the example of Srila Prabhupada, who followed that order given to him by his spiritual master to do the impossible. And by following that with great resolute determination, Vyavasaya Mika Buddhir, without any deviation, without any ulterior motive, without any diversions, he was successful, very successful, beyond even what Prabhupada had specifically instructed him to do. So that is his great austerity, or his great reputation as a tapasvi. He carried out the order of his spiritual master. Sometimes I think of instruction that Prabhupada gave to Lokanath Maharaj. He gave him an instruction he should take the bullock carts to all the villages in India and do padayatra. So he not only carried this instruction out, but he expanded it to include the whole world. And I think just last month the padayatra reached 100 countries, I think. And it's going to be 108 by the end of 1997. So this was an instruction. It was carried out with great determination. And expanded, so to speak. Not that one goes beyond the instruction of the spiritual master, but as Prabhupada gives the example of the son carries on the business of the father and not only maintains it but expands it, then the father is very pleased. So it's deeply fulfilling the order of the spiritual master. And this way, in this way, Lord Brahma is a great tapasvi. So it's said that if one does act this way, undergo tapasya and penance, that one fulfills the goal of human life. We think that the goal of human life is janmaishvarya shruti shribir, to gain material benefits, good birth, high education, aristocracy, wealth. These are the pillars of material success. And so these are being sought after. But the Bhagavatam has very specific instructions that the human form of life is not meant to advance in the path of material progress, but is to engage in some form of tapasya, enough at least to understand that the material world is not the rightful place for a civilized human being to live. So it is said in the fifth canto that if one is yasyasti bhakti bhagapatya kinchana, sarvayar gunastatra samasate sura, harava bhaktasya kuto mahat guna mano ratena sati davato bhi. That even if one develops good qualities and becomes very religious and does many things, unless one is actually a devotee, a bhakta of Krishna, yasasti bhakti bhagavati kinchana, and one, if one does that, if one is a good person and obtains all the good qualities and follows the path of bhakti, it is said that one can obtain all the good qualities that is possible for a human being to have, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation. But one must become a bhakta, because to obtain these qualities is not actually possible for one who's not a follower of Krishna. Krishna will give many different instructions, and sometimes they may appear contradictory, like he asked Arjuna to fight. It was a very unpalatable instruction. But he did it, and therefore he was a bhakta, and he performed austerity, tapodivyam putraka yena sattvam, which Rishabhadev says is the path of perfection for a human being. And if one tries to get these qualities, or be moral, or dutiful, or obedient, without being a bhakta, harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna, the instructions of the Bhagavatam are very strict, that even though he may be very expert in mystic yoga or maintaining family and friends, if he's not a bhakta, harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna, manoratina sati davato bahi, he will be forced to engage in the external service of the Lord, which is the material energy. And such a person, it is said in the Bhagavatam, cannot be considered to have any good qualities, even though he may have some materially good qualities. But strictly speaking, from the point of view of the Bhagavatam, he can't have any good qualities. When Prabhupada was here, we visited the deacon of Westminster Abbey, and he had a friend with him, someone from the House of Lords, and Prabhupada was speaking, and this man objected. He said, I have a lot of friends who are, they're atheists, but they're very good people. They don't believe in God, but they're very good people, because this subject matter was being discussed. And then Prabhupada quoted this part of this verse, Araba Bhaktasya Kuto Mahadvanavad. If he's an atheist, he said, if he's an atheist, he can actually have no good qualities. And so this man disagreed very violently with Srila Prabhupada. He said, no, I can't accept that. I can't accept that an atheist can't have good qualities. But the Bhagavatam says we may try to do everything properly and morally, but if we're not a bhakta, then it has no ultimate worth unless Krishna is at the center. Then those things are not possible to obtain. They may be for a while, but they will be mixed. Because of the onslaughts of the modes of passion and ignorance, they will be overcome and one will become overwhelmed. So it's interesting in this verse that it says that the Supreme Transcendence is eternally distinguished by his internal potency. He's always enjoying. We never see a picture of Krishna undergoing severe penances and tapasya. He's always playing the flute, or he's dancing, or he's enjoying, even when he's giving instructions that are maybe unpalatable, like Arjuna has to fight, or carrying out some funeral ceremony or whatever, he's always smiling. Whenever we read about Krishna, right, it always says, he smilingly, the Lord said. So he's always enjoying, Even if he's in a situation that's not particularly enjoyable, right out in the middle of a battlefield, what is there to enjoy? Everybody's about ready to kill one another. But he's smiling. He's giving instructions to Arjuna. He's always smiling. So he's teaching that we have to come beyond this point of moral, material right and wrong, and come to the point of aham brahmasmi. So Krishna is always enjoying. This is a rasa. As much as a rasa as he has with the gopis, that he's dancing, telling jokes, and playing tricks on Radharani and the gopis, and his childhood pranks. He's always very mischievous, always cutting up, having a good time. He's also, as it is said here, and he's distinguished by this, by these activities. He has very specific characteristics that we can remember and talk about and sing about and chant about. And these are very wonderful characteristics. And he's subservient to the desires of his devotees. That's another great characteristic of Krishna, that he is totally in control of everything and always enjoying. But if someone reaches a certain level of devotion, then one is very disposed to, then Krishna becomes very disposed to that person's desire. Some of you saw, I think, the movie that Bhakti Chumash produced. It's being televised every Saturday in India. So in a recent one, I was just in Bombay, and in India, we watched on Saturday morning up in Prabhupada's room at the Juhu Temple, the episode that was about his pulling the Rath Yatra when he was a little boy. So we know the story. He was pulling this cart, and all the people in the neighborhood and his family and friends were all gathered around, and he was just having a great time. And the sequence, there was a dissolve to a scene of the gopis who were in Kurukshetra when Krishna and Balaram came. And there was a sort of a family reunion with Vasudeva and Devaki, and they were all in Kurukshetra. It's not so far from Vrindavan. So the gopis, what happened was, Gaura Mohan, Prabhupada's father, decided to tell everybody what Rath Yatra was all about. So after Srila Prabhupada, as a child, Abhay, was pulling the cart, his father sat everybody down and said, "Now I'll tell you what the meaning of Rath Yatra is." So he begins to tell the story. They're all sitting around, all the children and the friends. And then it dissolves into this scene of what Kurukshetra was like when Krishna visited. So the gopis were singing in a very nice dance also, dance, sing, song, dance, sort of Bharatanatyam, classical, about longing for, they wanted to see Krishna. And then suddenly Krishna and Balaram appeared, and they said they didn't recognize him because they were calling him Rajkumar. He's a king. He's dressed in very opulent gowns and is followed by so much infantry and soldiers and guards and a big retinue. So they were singing that they didn't recognize this Krishna, it wasn't the Krishna they were expecting. And they begin to sing very beautifully about how they wanted Krishna to come back with them to Vrindavan, like they used to in prior times, enjoy in the country atmosphere of Vrindavan instead of the royal opulent garb of Dwarka, which Krishna came. So towards the end of this song and dance, it goes on for about 10 minutes, they start beckoning to Krishna and Balaram to please come with them. And then in the gestures, they're as if they're pulling a rope, and Krishna and Balaram are being pulled. It looks like they're being pulled forward to follow the gopis to Vrindavan, which is the image that ultimately was based upon the Rath Yatra, that there would be this parade. Of course, it never actually happened, but the gopis would be pulling Krishna and Balaram back to Vrindavan. So Krishna is subservient to these desires, to the desires of his devotee. That's one of his characteristics, whether it be a gopi or anyone who attains a level of appreciation, a level of understanding, a level of obedience. Krishna is very disposed to that person. So he always engages in these pastimes. But it's also mentioned that he's also enjoying just creating the material world. Pastimes, he enjoys the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. So Krishna is so great that he enjoys everything. Everything he's doing is like playful, even if it's creating the whole universe. It's a big job, but it's all enjoyment to him. It's all just fun and games, just creating a world here, a world there, a universe, seeing it's destroyed, making sure that everything is going on. It's all done in a playful fashion. His killing of the demons is also done in a very playful way. It may look like a very serious thing, and sometimes people are fainting when they're watching. Krishna's being attacked by the demon. Sometimes he looks like he's being knocked back a few steps. But in a very nonchalant way, he dispenses with them, and they no longer exist. So this is also play, just like Prabhupada describes it. The child is playing with the father, they're having some kind of a mock fight, or we see it all the time, people are having a mock fight, especially in India. Just remembering, having been there a long time, you see so many people. You think at first, if you're from the West, you think they're fighting, but they're just playing. They look like they're fighting with each other. So this is Krishna's also, his Leela. It's described rasaya, rasa. It's a rasa. Creating the world, sporting with the gopis, killing demons. It's all just playful fun for Krishna. That's God. That's what we mean when we speak of God from the Vaishnava perspective. It's all fun. And when Krishna was the Parthasarathi, when he was the driver of Arjuna, he appeared to be, in one of these obedient positions where he would have to do whatever was directed by his devotee. Now, Arjuna was directing him, take me here, take me there. And he was the obedient driver of the chariot. But the reason that he was so obedient was because Arjuna didn't want him to break his promise that he had made to Arjuna that he would engage only as a driver, that he wouldn't take part in the fighting. So Arjuna, being very obedient and faithful, didn't want the Supreme Lord to break his rule, to break his promise that I'm not going to fight, I'm going to drive you. Whatever you say, I'm going to do. And he had made that vow. So it was Arjuna's desire that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, not break his vow. It wasn't that he was thinking, oh, I'm directing the Supreme Lord, I'm telling him what to do, he's my driver, I can boss him around. But no, he wanted to see that his promise was fulfilled, that he would be a driver. And the driver has to, you know, follow the order of the person who's directing him, of the person manning the chariot. So in that Bhagavad Gita verse, Krishna is described as a chuta, the one who does not fall down. So Arjuna didn't want him to fall down from making a promise. Therefore he was called a chuta. Chuta is one who falls down, and achuta is one who does not fall down. We are chuta, we're sort of fallen down living entities who are breaking our promises all the time. So another aspect of this type of tapasya is that one is very loyal and obedient. Sometimes when we think of Krishna, it's this kind of rasa with the gopis and dancing and joking and sporting. But actually in our process of sadhana bhakti or vaidhi bhakti, we practice understanding who Krishna is through the order of the disciplic succession. And there's a loyalty or an obedience that is involved. And if you analyze what we mean by love in the material world, or even love generally, it's based first of all on the principle of obedience and of loyalty. There has to be these elements first in the beginning stage. One has to be loyal to, obedient, faithful, in order for some more developed sense of attachment to develop. So Arjuna is exhibiting this, and Lord Brahma is also exhibiting. He was given an instruction, very simple, very terse instruction that we can't understand, just two syllables. And by meditating on those instructions and by being faithful and obedient to those instructions, he was given complete blessings of the Lord to do an impossible task. And Lord Brahma is also considered a great tapasvi because there's one famous verse in the 10th canto, Tatenu Kampam Susamiksha Mano, Prabhupada quotes in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita many times, Unjana Evatma Kripavi Pakam. One should always tolerate the misdeeds of the past that come in the form of karma. And if one is able to tolerate them while still maintaining offering of obeisances with body, mind, and words to the Supreme Lord, then one becomes eligible for liberation. So another form of tapasya is just tolerating, just tolerance, titiksha. Titiksha karunaka surida sarvadehinam. It is one of the qualities that decorate the Vaishnavas. Very, very tolerant. And at the same time, he never blames the Lord for his misfortune, but he thinks, this is what I've got coming to me due to my past misdeeds. And always offering obeisances, irrespective of how much travail and difficulty he has to experience. So this verse is quoted a lot. Prabhupada was obviously very fond of it. Tatenu kampam susamikshamana. We will definitely have to suffer. Of course, the devotee doesn't suffer in the same way that a non-devotee has to suffer. And in the beginning, when Lord Brahma created the world, he also had to create everything, not only good things, but even the bad things, because it's a very difficult thing to do, to create the material world, which is full of duality. So along in the beginning with everything else, he created fear of death, the bodily concept of life, the sense of false propriety, the sense of self-deception. So everyone in the material world, although a part and parcel of Krishna, Mamai Vamso Jivaloke, has a choice to choose. In the human form of life, it is said that one has to engage in austerity. But the goal of austerity is to reach the Supreme Lord. And one, again, is also endowed with free will. One can become a slave to one's own senses, one's own desires, or one can become completely free by following the regulated principles of freedom, which are laid out in the basic principles that one has to follow as a devotee. So following the order of Krishna through the disciple succession, the spiritual master Prabhupada has written many times, is the secret of success, and is actually the greatest tapasya. It may seem like it wasn't such a tapasya that Prabhupada was asked to spread Krishna consciousness, but actually spreading Krishna consciousness is a very, very great tapasya. Just like you had to fight here for 10 years in a pitched battle with the whole British government. 10 years one had to fight. Just to spread Krishna consciousness. It seems like such an easy thing. You just meet people, you talk to them, you tell them how nice Krishna consciousness is, you give them prasadam and chant, and they like the chanting. Go out and spread Harinam and books. But it's actually a very great austerity. Of course, Prabhupada said that he was 80% lenient, and these are very simple, not difficult austerities to follow. But nonetheless, nonetheless, they're very difficult austerities to follow. Now, for a devotee, it's a little bit different. We sometimes experience hardships, but they're not exactly in the realm of karmic reactions, because Krishna is actually taking care of us. And sometimes he puts his devotees into a seemingly awkward or difficult position or situation, just to make them become more devoted. And as he says, yaham anugranami harishe tadanam shnahi, has the tendency to reduce our material affluence if it will help us advance in Krishna consciousness. So I want to read one section of a purport that the team that was translating Prabhupada's books wrote shortly after Prabhupada left, continuing in the great tradition, quoting the various acharyas and Thakurs of our time. It's the purport on the verse of the 10th canto in which Lord Brahma is saying that one has to wait for the Lord to bestow his causeless mercy on him, even though suffering the past reactions or suffering from one's past deeds. So again, we're all waiting for the Lord to bestow his mercy upon us. One of the symptoms of surrender is that we will wait, no matter how long it takes. If we get it or we don't get it, we're going to wait. So this question comes up: how much am I suffering because of karma? How much am I suffering because of the Lord directly taking charge of my life? So they've written this very nice purport to this verse, which I'm going to read. Prabhupada's translation first is: my dear Lord, one who earnestly awaits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation before it has become his rightful claim. So this is their purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulated principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word Susamikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord, even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord. And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of the material world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord with all his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes